Anandasya, Jana Jana Salakaya, Chaksu Samilitam Jena Tasmai, Sri Gurve Nama, Sri Chaitanya, Vidura was forcibly expelled from the palace of Hastinapur by the harsh, arrow-like words of Duryodhana. He went on pilgrimage for many, many years. And while he was traveling, he simply thought about Krishna. He went from temple to holy place, to temple to holy place, wandering, living a completely austere mendicant's life, far from the plush pleasures of the palace, depending fully on Krishna, lying down under a tree somewhere at night, getting something to eat somehow or another, depending on Krishna. And then he visited, after so many years, he even visited Dwarka, described. And then he visited Prabhachetra, where he heard about the destruction in the fratricidal war of his family, his relatives. And then he went on to the west, and then heading east again, he finally went to the bank of the Jamuna in north central India, and there he met Uddhava, the great devotee of the Lord, who had just come from his final meeting, darshan, with Krishna, just before Krishna left this planet. Just before. So Uddhava was on his way to Badrikashram. He was full of deep separation from Krishna. And Vidura knew that his relatives were all gone. But when he saw this intimate associate of Krishna, Uddhava, because Vidura was a great devotee of Krishna, when he saw Uddhava, this personal associate of Krishna, he was in ecstasy. And he immediately began asking him, after exchanging loving affection, he asked him for news of the family of Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport that Vidura asked Uddhav about the welfare of his relatives, although he already knew that they were no longer in the world. This inquiry appears to be very queer. Why, of course, why would he ask a question that he already knew the answer to? And Prabhupada explains. But Jiva Goswami states that the news was shocking to Vidura. The news that his family was no longer in this world, his dearly beloved family, who were not only dear family members, but they were all exalted personalities, associates of Krishna, because it's natural to love one's family members. And that love and affection is perfected when the family members are devotees or exalted personalities. Then the affection is not material affection. So Vidura and Uddhava, all his friends, or both their friends and associates and family members, they were the most exalted personalities. They were personal associates of Krishna. So it shocked Vidura so much that although he knew that his family members were in present, but he inquired again due to great curiosity. He wanted it confirmed. Because when a dearly beloved leaves this world, there's a tendency to think, no, how could it be? It's impossible. How could such a thing happen? So he asked again. Thus his inquiry was psychological and not practical. He already knew, so it wasn't a practical inquiry. So he asked, he began to speak to Uddhava after they sat together. Just imagine the ecstasy they were feeling. Pure, exalted souls, meeting by the arrangement of Krishna, both reminding each other of Krishna. So Vidura began to ask questions. And he first, because Uddhava had just was an associate of Krishna in Dwarka, and Vidura had association with Krishna in Hastinapur, in the capital city, he began asking about all those who were living in Dwarka. And first he asked about Krishna and Balaram. "Please tell me whether the original personality of Godhead, original personalities of Godhead, that's Krishna and Balaram, who incarnated themselves at the request of Brahma, who was born out of the lotus flower from the Lord, and who have increased the prosperity of the world by elevating everyone, how are they doing within the house of Surasena? How are they doing? How is Krishna and Balaram? Because all the personalities who Vidura is inquiring about, they are somehow or another connected with Krishna and Balaram. And hearing about Krishna and hearing about Balaram was all that was on the mind of Vidura, because he had been wandering throughout the world thinking of nothing but Krishna, purifying himself, seeing deities, going to one holy place, going to a next holy place, just thinking about Krishna. We can't imagine practically how exalted this consciousness is, that he had no other desire within his heart other than to think about Krishna. No other desire. So pure, already such an exalted devotee. So therefore, naturally, when he met Uddhava, Vidura was so ecstatic because he had someone with which he could share his thoughts about Krishna and inquire about Krishna. Even though Vidura was so senior to Uddhava, Uddhava had just, he was a personal associate of Krishna. So first he asked him about Krishna and Balaram. Then, in text 27, he asked about Vasudev, the father of Krishna in Dwarka. And then in 28, about Pradyumna. Pradyumna we heard about. Pradyumna was the son of Krishna and Rukmini Devi. And then he asked about Ugrasena in text 29. Ugrasena was the father of Kamsa and the head of the Yadu dynasty. And under Krishna's protection, Ugrasena reigned as the king. And then in text 30, Vidura asked about Sambha. So all these personalities are all connected to Krishna. So all the talk that he was interested in hearing and all his inquiries was just to elicit some talk about Krishna and those who are connected to Krishna. His heart, Vidura's heart, was only filled with thoughts about Krishna and wanting to hear about Krishna. Because hearing about Krishna from the right source, if one is properly a proper recipient, is association with Krishna. And that is what Vidura was longing for. So in text 30, he asks about, Vidura asks about Sambha. "Old gentle one, does Sambha fare well?" Sambha is the son of Lord Krishna and Jambavati, his queen. "Sambha exactly resembles the son of the personality of Godhead," meaning Pradyumna. "In a previous birth, he, Sambha, was born as Kartikeya in the womb of the wife of Lord Shiva, and now he has been born in the womb of Jambavati, the most enriched wife of Krishna." Prabhupada's purport. Lord Shiva, one of the three qualitative incarnations of the personality of Godhead, is the plenary expansion of the Lord. Meaning, he's the Lord of the, there are three modes, qualities, gunas, passion, goodness, and ignorance. And Lord Shiva is the predominating deity of tamagun, the mode of ignorance. And his son, Lord Shiva's son, is Kartikeya, who is the great warrior, What do they call Kartikeya in South India? I can't remember. I think so. Morgan. When Lord Sri Krishna descends into the material world, all his plenary portions also appear with him to exhibit different functions of the Lord. But for the pastimes of Vrindavan, all functions are performed by the Lord's different plenary expansions. So all the different incarnations of the Lord, they enter within the form of Krishna and are present within Krishna, because Krishna is the most complete whole, and Krishna, as the source of all the incarnations, includes everyone. From Ram to Lord Nrisingadev to Varaha, all the incarnations, Kiridaksha Vishnu, Gaubidaksha Vishnu, Kalki, they are all within Krishna. So when Krishna is performing his different pastimes outside of Vrindavan, it is these incarnations that are acting. Therefore, Krishna outside of Vrindavan is sometimes called Vasudev Krishna. But Krishna inside of Vrindavan, within the realm of Vrindavan, he performs pastimes that Krishna himself, the Supreme Lord, performs, that no one else can perform. Because Krishna himself has qualities that no other incarnation, no other expansion has. He plays his wonderful flute playing, his transcendental leelas, activities with the residents of Vrindavan, his very sweet dealings. What is it? It's Venu Madhurya, Leela Madhurya. Exalted childhood pastimes, pastimes there. What is the other one? Huh? And his beauty. There's no other expression. Rupa Madhurya. His form is the most beautiful in Vrindavan. So all the other functions, but for the pastimes at Vrindavan, all functions are performed by the Lord's different plenary expansions. Vasudeva is a plenary expansion of Narayan. When the Lord appears as Vasudeva before Devaki and Vasudeva, he appeared in his capacity as Narayan. Similarly, all the demigods of the heavenly kingdom appeared as associates of the Lord in the form of Prajumna, Samba, Uddhava, etc. It is learned here that Kamadeva appeared as Prajumna, Kartikeya as Samba, and one of the Vasus, another demigod, as Uddhav. All of them served in their different capacities in order to enrich the pastimes of Krishna. So all the demigods also came to take part in the pastimes of Krishna. Very happy to do so. Then he continues asking, after asking about Samba in text 31. O Uddhav, does Yuyudhan fare well? He learned the intricacies of the military art from Arjuna and attained the transcendental destination, which is very difficult to reach, even for great renouncers. So, Prabhupada explains in his purport that the devotees, by the grace of Krishna, they attain things that the non-devotees, even if they are great renouncers, even if they are great yogis, even if they perform unlimited austerities, they cannot attain those things that the devotees can attain. And not by their own power, but by Krishna's grace. Because the qualification of the devotees is that they love Krishna and they fully depend on Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates with them completely. Then in text 32, he asks about Akrura. Please tell me whether Akrura, the son of Svafalka, is doing well. He is faultless, a faultless soul surrendered unto the personality of Godhead. He once lost his mental equilibrium due to his ecstasy of transcendental love and fell down on the dust of a road which was marked with the footprints of Lord Krishna. So this is described, will be described in the 10th canto, when he was coming to Vrindavan to bring Krishna from Vrindavan to Mathura. He saw the footprints of Krishna And when he saw them, he rolled on the ground in ecstasy. He was so thrilled. Prabhupada explains in the purport. When Akrura came to Vrindavan in search of Krishna, he saw the footprints of the Lord on the dust of Nandagram, and at once fell in them in ecstasy of transcendental love. This ecstasy is possible for a devotee who is fully absorbed in incessant thoughts of Krishna. Madhura was like that. Uddhava was like that. Such a pure devotee of the Lord is naturally faultless because he is always associated with the supremely pure personality of Godhead. So by always being absorbed in thinking about Krishna, thinking Krishna, 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 because Krishna is the supreme pure, by keeping Krishna's name and Krishna's service and Krishna's thoughts within one's consciousness, then that person who constantly does so is fully purified because there is nothing else within his consciousness other than Krishna. It is like something that is impure being always in contact with the sun. And even though it is impure, it will be purified so quickly because of the purifying potency of the sun. So the name of Krishna is like that. Krishna's thoughts are like that. Constant thought of the Lord is the antiseptic method for keeping oneself free from the infectious contaminations of the material qualities. Why? This term, this infectious contaminations of the material qualities. What? So descriptive. Why is this such an accurate description? What is an infection? You go somewhere and you touch something that is infected, and then you somehow scratch your eye or put your finger in your mouth or something like that. And suddenly, just by touching something that's infected, you catch that disease and it begins to rage within your body. So similarly, associating with the material nature is like that. We touch something and somehow we ingest. Somehow we take within ourselves, just by association, some material germs, material desires, and they begin to breed in our consciousness. And suddenly we want one, or we want two, and two don't satisfy us, so we want hundreds. And in this way, soon as one has the tendency to enjoy in the material world, he comes in contact with so many of the infectious qualities of material nature. So what is the cure for this? What is the prevention? Because an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. The prevention is to always chant Hare Krishna, to always keep in the mood of Krishna, being Krishna's servant of Krishna's devotees, and always keep Krishna within our heart and mind. Constant thought of the Lord is the antiseptic method for keeping oneself free from the infectious contamination of the material qualities. And they are infectious. We pick them up and we ingest them, and suddenly we're full of some desire or another raging within us, our consciousness. The pure devotee of the Lord is always in company with the Lord by thinking of Him. Yet, in the particular context of time and place, the transcendental emotions take a different turn. So this is describing Uddhava's emotions, transcendental emotions, when coming in contact with the footprints of the Lord in the dust of Vrindavan. And this breaks the mental equilibrium of the devotee. Lord Chaitanya displayed the typical example of transcendental ecstasy, as we can understand from the life of this incarnation of God. So Mahaprabhu was always going around chanting, dancing in great ecstasy, crying, laughing, erupting in ecstasy. He had that infection. There was a story like that when Mahaprabhu came back from taking initiation in Gaya from Sripad Ishwarapuri, his spiritual master. And after that, he began exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy, fainting, crying, walking along and thinking about Krishna, and falling to the ground. And he approached Srivas Thakur, and everyone was shocked. His mother was so upset, and she brought him to one doctor after another. Oh, my dear son Nimai has some kind of disease or another, and he's falling on the ground all the time. And it was love for Krishna. So Mahaprabhu went to Srivas Thakur and said, everyone is saying that I have an imbalance of airs in my body. I have a disease. What do you think? And Srivas Thakur said, the disease that you have, I would also like. So we want that disease, that infection. So then, more questions. In text 33, Vidura asks about Devaki, about Krishna's mother. 34, he asks about Aniruddha. 35, four sons of Krishna by other wives, Charadesna, Gada, and other sons. In 36, he asks, after having asked about the Yarus, these were all members of the Yaru dynasty. Then in 36, he begins inquiring about other family members in the Kuru dynasty, the Pandavas. And first, in 36, he asks about Maharaj Yudhisthira. It is Yudhisthira, is he now maintaining the kingdom according to religious principles and with respect for the path of religion? Formerly, Duryodhana was burning with envy because Yudhisthira was being protected by the arms of Krishna and Arjuna, as if they were his own arms. Krishna was taking care of Yudhisthira as if he was taking care of himself, just like our arms. We take care of ourselves. This is our first concern. But when there is love for another, those same arms feel as much committed to the protection of that other as he feels him to protect himself. So Krishna protected Yudhisthira with the same intensity that he would protect himself like anyone protects himself. This is the love of Krishna for his devotees. Then in 37 and 38 and 39 and then 40, he continues asking about the other Pandavas, about Bhima in 37 and 38, about Arjuna. He's going in age order, going down. He's showing the etiquettes. First Yudhisthira, then Bhima, then Arjuna. And then in 39, Nakul and Sahadev, the two twin sons of Madri Devi. And then in text 40, he asks about Kunti Devi, the mother of the Pandavas. And then in text 41, he asks about, not exactly inquires, but he makes a statement for Dhritarashtra, about Dhritarashtra. He didn't ask about his welfare, but he made a statement that expressed his lamentation for Dhritarashtra. He said, O gentle one, O Uddhav, I simply lament for he, Dhritarashtra, who rebelled against his brother after death, against Pandu. By him, I was driven out of my own house, although I am his sincere well-wisher, because he accepted the line of action adopted by his own sons. Who is the head of those sons? Duryodhana. So we could, even the devotees, they, like Vidura was a great devotee, he only had well wishes for for Dhritarashtra, and even the sons, his sons, Duryodhana, he didn't have any malice to them. But yet, his life was not simple, his life was not smooth, he was insulted, he wasn't listened to, even though he was doing he had the knowledge and wisdom to advise properly. Practically, he was kicked out by the insults. Then he wandered around, just depending on Krishna. So his life, in one sense, was not simple. It was dutiful and it was ecstatic. But it wasn't just smooth sailing where everything worked according to his own plan. No, rather, he was in ecstasy, not because everything was going well. Practically speaking, things were going badly all the time. The Pandavas were being hurt continuously by Dhritarashtra against his desire. So things were, practically speaking, never going the way he wanted. But yet, he was always ecstatic because of his full dependence on Krishna. And that is the perfection that the devotee looks for. Sometimes religious people think that their perfection that they want by virtue and as a result of their prayers and their devotion is perfection here in the material world. But those kind of religious people, practically speaking, don't know anything about what religion is. Religion doesn't mean to please us doing what will please me, but actually real religion means pleasing Krishna out of great love. So great devotees, that is their only thought. And then whatever happens to them, they continue with that thought of somehow or another, whatever situation they're in, thinking of Krishna and with great devotion, trying to please Krishna as best they can. Whatever the circumstance is, they pray to Krishna for the intelligence, to please Krishna, whatever situation they're in. And then they accept whatever situation they're in as Krishna's arrangement. Here's what Prabhupada explains in his purport about Dhritarashtra and Vidura's mood. Vidura did not ask about the welfare of his elder brother because there was no chance of his well-being. The only news he would have gotten was of his gliding down to hell. Vidura was a sincere well-wisher for Dhritarashtra, and he had a thought about him in the corner of his heart. He lamented that Dhritarashtra could rebel against the sons of his dead brother Pandu, and that he could drive him, Vidura, out of his own house on the dictation of his crooked sons. In spite of these actions, Vidura never became an enemy of Dhritarashtra, but continued to be his well-wisher. And at the last stage of Dhritarashtra's life, it was Vidura only who proved to be his real friend. That was in the first canto in the 13th chapter. Such is the behavior of a Vaishnava like Vidura. He desires all good, even for his enemies. So what hearts, what consciousness these exalted devotees have. Just free from envy. They don't wish harm to anyone. Even if someone harms them, they still don't wish harm to them. Such wonderful consciousness. They're everyone's well-wishers. And they do good for everyone. And they try never to do harm for anyone. So he didn't exactly ask about Dhritarashtra. But he will continue this thought. And this, what will happen in the next few verses, we'll hear something about how a devotee thinks and how Krishna deals with the devotees. And the special importance of this for us and in relationship to what's going to follow in the succeeding chapters. So, Dhritarashtra said, Dhritarashtra was said to be in an unfortunate situation, having rebelled, and he's in Maya. He's under the control of the material energy due to his selfishness, not going, basically going against Krishna putting himself and what he thinks will make him satisfied and happy in the center of his activities. That is Dhritarashtra's situation. And Vidura doesn't ask, how is he? Because for a person like that, he can only be going bad. Even though if it appears at some points that he's going well, we can understand that it must have a sad ending. There was no happy ending for a materialistic person. So, Vidura continued, I am not astonished at this, having traveled all over the world without being seen by others. He was experienced. He saw the way the world was. The activities, then he changes. The activities of the personality of Godhead, which are like those of a man in this mortal world, this is called Naralila, his human-like activities. Because when Krishna comes to this world, avadananti mamula manushyam tanam ashrita, the materialistic foolish people think that his activities, because they mimic, in one sense, they mimic the activities of people in this world. People think that Krishna is motivated, or Krishna is like a human, an ordinary man, but he is not. So he says the activities of the personality of Godhead, which are like those of a man in this mortal world, are bewildering to others. But I know of his greatness, of Krishna's greatness, by his grace, and thus I am happy in all respects. He could understand who Krishna actually was, even though he was the friend of the Pandavas, that he drove the chariot of Arjuna, he had queens, he had a palace, he made war, he made peace. He was a boy, he was a coward boy, he went to Gurukula school, he learned this, he learned that, he ate, he dealt with his children. Yet, despite how all these activities resembled those activities of a human being, he understood, Vidura understood, he was not bewildered by this, but understood who Krishna was. That Krishna was engaging in activities, the Lord, the Supreme Lord of all that be, was engaging in activities with his devotees, pastimes, lila. So he was not bewildered. But by Krishna's grace he could understand. And this is the only way one can understand, by Krishna's grace. Because through our own power, no matter how intelligent we are, no matter how powerful we are, no matter how wealthy we are, strong we are, clever we are, no one can actually realize this without descending grace. Vidura was carrying that so deeply, and therefore, because he was actually realized about who Krishna was and his relationship with Krishna, and because he had actually developed his love for Krishna, therefore he was wandering around thinking only Krishna, 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 Krishna. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. Because now Vidura is going to be speaking about Krishna, these next verses. Although he was the brother of Dhritarashtra, Vidura was completely different. By the grace of Lord Krishna, he was not foolish like his brother. And thus his brother's association could not influence him. Even though he was living with his brother in the palace, he had a different mind. He was a devotee. Dhritarashtra and his materialistic sons wanted to falsely lord it over the world by dint of their own strength. He was the archetypal, typical materialist, Dhritarashtra, by his own power. Dhritarashtra. He wanted to hold on to the kingdom with everything he could by diplomacy. But Vidura was not like that. The Lord encouraged them in this. In their maya, in their wrong activities, the Lord encouraged them. And thus they became more and more bewildered. Chipram bhavati dhamatma shashvak chantin nagastiti. No. Not that verse. There's a verse in the 16th chapter, Tanaham Dvishata Kroran Samsuresh Naradama Chipram Ajasram Asuram Asureshev Yonashu. That Krishna actually puts, he encourages them. And we see this in the material world. We read the newspapers, we see how one person is getting powerful and he's gaining power and he's defeating his enemies and his wealth is increasing. And we think maybe, why is Krishna letting this go on? Seems like they're winning. But it's actually Krishna's encouraging them in their bewilderment. And in the end they will lose everything. It must be. Thus they became more and more bewildered due to the Lord's encouragement. But Vidura wanted to achieve sincere devotional service of the Lord. So according to one's desire, one either gets more and more bewildered, or like Vidura, who desired to achieve sincere devotional service to the Lord, and therefore became a soul absolutely surrendered to the Absolute Personality of Godhead. Means he wanted to be instrumental only. He did not want to go against Krishna, he wanted to serve Krishna. He could realize this in the progress of his pilgrim's journey, and thus he was freed from all doubts. He actually realized his relationship with Krishna. He was not at all sorry to be bereft of his hearth and home, because he had now experienced that dependence on the mercy of the Lord is a greater freedom than so-called freedom at home. A person should not be in the renounced order of life unless he is firmly convinced of being protected by the Lord. This stage of life is explained in the Bhagavad Gita as Abhayam Sattvasam Sudhi. Every living entity is factually completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. But unless one is in the pure state of existence, he cannot be established in this position. One cannot imitate. One has to be purified to actually be able to fully take shelter of Krishna and depend on Krishna in this way. There's a process, the process of sadhana bhakti, to develop this consciousness, this mood of full dependence on Krishna. Full faith, full loving dependence on Krishna. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in his Krishna Samhita that the difference, amazingly enough, between a lower stage of prema bhakti and the highest stage of prema bhakti. The highest stage. This is prema bhakti. This is already completely on the most purified transcendental platform. The difference between one stage and the other is faith, the depth of faith. So one has to be so purified and make Krishna everything. That is the goal. This stage of dependence is called Sattvasam Sudhi, or purification of one's existence. The result of such purification is exhibited in fearlessness, because fearfulness is the most basic quality of every conditioned soul. Everyone is fearing. That we say eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Defending means fearing. Because why do we defend? Because we're afraid. And out of these, even eating, sleeping, and mating, and defending, the most basic, deepest impulse is this fearing and defending one. To survive. But a devotee has full faith that he's eternal. So what is the question of not surviving? And he has full faith that he is in the hands of Krishna. So what is the question of anything harmful coming to him? Whatever happens, he's in Krishna's hands. So only in that way, with that consciousness, can one be fearless. And therefore going to the spiritual, Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha literally means the place where there is no anxiety. So when one is in Krishna's hands, one is fearless and without anxiety, even if superficially he appears to be in the material world. A devotee of the Lord who is called Narayana Para is never afraid of anything, because he is always aware of the fact that the Lord protects him in all circumstances. Narayana paraksavena kutastana bibhyati. Never afraid. With this conviction, Vidura traveled alone. And he was not seen nor recognized by any friend or foe. Thus he enjoyed freedom of life without obligation to the many duties of the world. This is wonderful Krishna consciousness. One time Prabhupada was walking in Calcutta with some of his disciples at the Victoria Memorial, which is a big, big, big building. And Prabhupada was remembering when it was built so many tens of years before. And he remembered when it was being built and there was scaffolding. The scaffolding was up. And he remembered when he was a boy in Calcutta, so many years before, when it was being built, he climbed the scaffolding to the top. And one of the devotees said to Prabhupada, "You must have been so brave then, as a boy." And Prabhupada's reply was, I still am brave. Otherwise, how could I have come alone? 70-year-old man, coming alone, 2 heart attacks, on the boat, going over, coming alone, no money, not knowing anyone, just landing. Bravery, fearlessness, full dependence on Krishna. And not being in any anxiety about it either. As Prabhupada said, I did not know whether to turn left or right when I got off. And no anxiety. Because he was walking, Krishna was with him on the boat, and Krishna met him on the shore as well. So then, after explaining in the verse and purport, Vidura's mood and his dependence on Krishna, the next verse describes why the devotees can depend on Krishna. It describes how Krishna deals. The appearance of the Lord is manifest for one, the annihilation of the upstarts, paritranaya sadunam vinashaya cha duskritam. So vinashaya cha duskritam means to get rid of the upstarts, the duskritinas, the demonic elements. And paritranaya sadhana means to protect the devotees. So his activities, Krishna's activities, are transcendental and are enacted for the understanding of all persons. Otherwise, since the Lord is transcendental to all the material modes, what purpose could he serve by coming to earth? So there are 3 points here in this verse. One, Krishna comes to get rid of the upstarts. And second, to his activities are transcendental and to for the understanding of everyone, all persons. And when Krishna comes to this world, it has nothing to do with the reasons why we come to this world, or anyone who is under the control of the material energy. We come to this world, are forced into a particular body. We did not choose to be born in the body or the country or the family that we were born into. To have light skin, dark skin, male, female, tall, short, intelligent, less intelligent, strong, weak. We did not choose these things. We were forced into situations to take the birth. And then we grow into that and we accept it and we start thinking that we're choosing, but we're not. We're forced. But Krishna's birth and appearance has nothing to do with force, because he has nothing to do with the material energy. When we talk about force, being forced, that means that something is forcing us. But who can force Krishna to do anything? The material nature forces us, but prakriti kriyamani guna kamani sarvasha. That material energy is under Krishna. So nothing forces Krishna to come to this world, but he has his own mission. Nothing to do. Because it's important, because now we're starting to hear more and more. We heard in the second canto about the creation, how Krishna is the great creator, but we didn't see much about the person who is Krishna. And here, Krishna has just left, that person has just left, and Vidura is asking so many questions about the person who is Krishna. So we have to get it correct, who this Krishna is, and when he comes to this world, his appearance and activities have nothing to do with the appearance and activities of us common folk under the control of the modes of nature. They're all dibyam, transcendental. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. The activities of the Lord are to be accepted and relished by all living entities because they are transcendental. All our activities, they're just mundane, controlled. His activities are to attract the ordinary man towards the Lord. The Lord always acts in favor of the devotees, and therefore ordinary men who are fruitive actors or seekers of salvation may be attracted to the Lord when he acts as protector of the devotees. So many things. Vidura was acting always free from anxiety, whatever he did, because he knew that Krishna was protecting him and he had placed himself fully under the control of Krishna. Therefore, he was fearless. So all the activities of the Lord show the fearlessness of the devotees, and they show how Krishna always protects the devotees. So we need to hear this. Otherwise, where will the faith come from to place ourselves fully under the protection of Krishna? So all people, the fruitive actors, those seeking salvation, they're all afraid. They can attain their goals by devotional service, and the salvationists can also attain their goal in life by devotional service to the Lord. The devotees do not want the fruitive results of their work, nor do they want any kind of salvation. Then what do they want? They relish the glorious superhuman activities of the Lord, such as his lifting Govardhan. In infancy, his activities are enacted to attract all kinds of men, kamis, jnanis, and bhaktis. But the bhaktis, they are different from the kamis and jnanis because they don't want anything from Krishna. They just want to serve Krishna. He, Krishna, is transcendental to all laws of karma. There is no possibility of his accepting a form of maya as is forced on the ordinary living entities who are bound by the actions and reactions of their own deeds. So there's that famous verse in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Janma karma chame dibyam evam yo viti tatvata chakvadeham puna janma naiti mam eti sa arjuna. That if one actually understands the nature of Krishna's birth and activities, that they are divyam, transcendental, puna janma naiti. That means that one, just by understanding the nature of Krishna's activities and birth, no more birth for the living entity. Finished. Material life finished. Prabhupada was once asked, what is the most important verse of the Bhagavad Gita? And his answer was that one. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo viti tatvata chakvadeham puna janmanam janma naiti mam. And what happens? Mam eti comes to me. By understanding who Krishna is and that his nature and the nature of his activities, they are divyam, they are transcendental, divine, they are not like ours. So we should become attracted more and more to hearing about Krishna. And the final verse in this chapter, O my friend, Vidura says to Uddhava, please therefore chant the glories of the Lord, who is meant to be glorified in the places of pilgrimage. He is unborn, yet he appears. He takes his birth by his causeless mercy upon the surrendered rulers of all parts of the universe. Only for their interest did he appear in the family of his unalloyed devotees, the Yadus. We'll read this last purport. It is very nice. So Vidura is asking, please, please talk Krishna Katha. Chant the glories of the Lord. I want to hear about Krishna. Please tell me about Krishna. Therefore, I've asked you about all these people. I want to hear about Krishna. Prabhupada's purport. And he said, to hear about Krishna is the purpose of pilgrimage. There are innumerable rulers all over the universe and different varieties of planets, the sun god and the sun planet, the moon god and the moon planet, Indra and the heavenly planets, Vayu, Varuna, and those in the Brahmaloka planet where Lord Brahma is living. All are obedient servants of the Lord. Whenever there is any trouble in the administration of the innumerable planets and different universes, the rulers pray for an appearance. And the Lord appears. So this is actually how Krishna appears. The demigods pray that Krishna, when there was trouble, the demigods have prayed that Krishna would come. The Bhagavatam has already confirmed this in the following verse. Ete chang sakalabang san Krishna tu bhagavan sayam indrari vyakulam lokam mridayante yuge yuge. That he appears to protect Indra from his enemies. Age after age, yuga after yuga. And every millennium, whenever there is any trouble for the obedient rulers, the Lord appears. He also appears for the sake of his pure unalloyed devotees. The surrendered rulers and the pure devotees are always strictly under the control of the Lord, and they are never disobedient to the desires of the Lord. The Lord is therefore always attentive to them. So Krishna comes because they love Krishna and they are following, serving Krishna, and he reciprocates with them and attentive to their needs. He's personal. He's not ungrateful. The purpose, now next point, because Madhura said that he is meant to be glorified in the places of pilgrimage. The purpose of pilgrimage is to remember the Lord constantly. So are you going on pilgrimage soon? You? Yes. You are always on pilgrimage. Wandering here and there, remembering Krishna constantly. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And you're going? When is that? Okay. And you're going very soon. Yeah?
Yeah.
If Krishna allows. The purpose of pilgrimage is to remember the Lord constantly. And therefore the Lord is known as Tirtha Kirti. The purpose of going to a place of pilgrimage is to get the chance to glorify the Lord. Even today, although the times have changed, there are still pilgrimage sites in India. For example, in Mathura and Vrindavan, Prabhupada says, where we had a chance to stay, people are awake from early in the morning at 4 a.m. up to nighttime and are constantly engaged some way or another in chanting the holy glories of the Lord. The beauty of such a pilgrimage site is that automatically one remembers the holy glories of the Lord. This is the wonderful thing about the holy dhams. There is such a spiritual supportive atmosphere. And here, not here meaning in the temple, but in all the cities of the world, automatically one remembers all the material things one needs. It's pulling and pulling and pulling us into more material remembrance. And just the opposite is the spiritual support that the holy places give us. The beauty of such a pilgrimage site is that automatically one remembers the holy glories of the Lord. His name, fame, qualities, form, pastimes, and entourage are all identical to the Lord. And therefore chanting the glories of the Lord invokes the personal presence of the Lord. Any time or anywhere pure devotees meet and chant the glories of the Lord, The Lord is present without any doubt. It is said by the Lord himself that he always stays where his pure devotees chant his glory. So there's a nice verse from one of the Puranas. Naham tishtani vaikunte yoginam riddhaishuva. So the Lord says that I am not present in Vaikuntha, nor am I present within the hearts, of the yogis. Yoginam riddhaishuva. Yatra tishtani, tattatishtani narada. Wait, yatra gayanti madbhakta. But I am present, O Narada, Krishna says. I am always present wherever my devotees are chanting my glories. Yatra gayanti madbhakta. Yes. That was a very opportune sneeze. Thank you. So we should always chant Krishna's glories in the association of Sajatiya Vaishnavas, and thereby constantly remember Krishna and evoke his presence and always be with Krishna. And he will keep us safe wherever we are. So, we have completed the first chapter of the third canto. And then, next week we will begin chapter 2, Remembrances of Lord Krishna. Because now Uddhava is going to begin to reply. A very, very wonderful chapter. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Si Vidur, si Uddhava, si Krishna ki jai. Si Prabhupada.